Judd's on. Yeah, back in the saddle again. Hi, Judd's LA, episode 2. Back to school, back in it, knee deep in the shit. Back in a training camp for myself, preseason football, full tilt, full schedule this past weekend, and as we speak, going on. I don't know, got my back to school haircut, got my back to school jeans, got my brand new shoes. I notice you do as well, Lurk. I'm the coach. This is Lurk. We're back at it. I'm ready for the season. You excited for the season, Lurk?
Yeah, I am. I think when it comes to NFL, that at this time with preseason, all NFL teams still have a glimmer of hope there for all 32. I'm not really big on the NCAA headlines so far, but all in all, I'm excited for it to start. How's the season looking for you?
We look good. In this point in the training camp, you delude yourself. You don't know. You don't know. You're practicing against yourselves. So you don't know. Some days you think you're going to be really, really good. Another moment you're going to be really, really bad. It's an up and down. It's a yin and yang with camp.
So you're really not sure if the offense is having a good day or the defense is having a bad or vice versa?
Right. And you're going against, in high school, the scout team is a significant drop off from the first team. So the first team kids will just plow through the scout team kids. And, the scout team kids, God bless them, they're getting killed. They keep coming up, the younger kids, the freshmen, the sophomores to be, they keep peeling themselves off the ground. And the scene, you know how it is. The seniors will pound them, but they keep getting up. And so I really think we're going to be good. Our offensive line is strong. We have great backs. Actually, one of our offensive linemen just committed to UCLA the other day. Quarterback is good. 3-year starter. We got some receivers that are playmakers. Depth is always an issue, but in high school, it's all about health and who you play. You know what I mean? Because no matter how good you are, especially in high school football, there's always somebody out there better than you, if that makes sense. Any given Friday. But, if we stay healthy, we're going to be good. Bottom line, we can win every game on our schedule. And once we get in the playoffs, we're dangerous because we got some home run hitters. But enough about that. Let's talk about preseason. Week one, really, and it's full swing right now. Patriots, Eagles, my Patriots look great. Tom Brady looked fantastic, 7-for-8, touchdown, 2 drives, put the ball where it needs to be every time like he does. Rookie receivers, Aaron Dobson, the guy from Marshall. Kembrell Tompkins, undrafted free agent out of Cincinnati, looked really good as well. Brady puts the ball where it needs to be at all times. Which, brings us to Tebow. Everybody loves to hate on Tebow. Look, he can't throw the ball, but he pounded the rock. Well, what are your thoughts on Tebow?
Well, you say everyone loves to bring the hate on him, but I think at the same time, the opposite goes. I think everyone also brings that not undeserving, that's a poor choice of words, but they bring that love to him unquestionably right away. But as I was mentioned to you earlier, I thought it was more an offensive line issue when it came to the Patriots and Tebow's time than it was actually Tebow's deficiencies. And honestly, I was actually happy to see the guy on the field, all in all.
Yeah, well, I think he held on the ball way too long in those situations. But he proves Tebow. He can run the rock. And you put someone like him and Blount in the same backfield. LeGarrette Blount looked tremendous, by the way. Yes. And I thought before he was going to struggle and make this team. I'm a fool. The guy's going to be a legitimate factor for this team. But you put him and Tebow in the same backfield. You got two big 250-pound guys running downhill at you. You have Tim throw Tim like I know him. You have Mr. Tebow throw the screen, throw the seam routes out of play action, boot him, get him on the edge, and have him in the inside zone. Do I think he's going to be doing that with his Patriots team? No. Do I think he could win in the NFL? Yeah, I think he could. He throws an awkward ball. It looks like it's going downhill. He throws an awkward ball, but, the guy's talented. He's arguably the best college quarterback of all time.
I think the big thing when it comes to Tebow is, are you going to get the bang for your buck? Because when you draft or you have these franchise quarterbacks, you're looking for like a decade of service out of them. The way Tebow plays, you're not going to get a decade of service that way.
Well, that's the style of offense, and that's why the zone read is going to be something that's going to take a long time to really catch on in the NFL, because those quarterbacks take a beating. That's the only thing they talk about. Oh, the NFL defenses are going to figure it out. This is not math class. It's not getting up on the board and figuring out a problem. No, the deception is too much. It's the quarterback's going to get hit. And you see that with Robert Griffin III. He's going to get banged. Michael Vick, same thing. These guys can't stay healthy because they're going to get killed. The only way, and something I'm going to probably talk about at length later on, the only way that offense is going to work is they make a commitment to it at the top and they have three run-first quarterbacks and go from there. But, you get sprinkled in once in a while, but you can't have one guy and then the rest of them be passes, if that makes sense. You can't really have that. Speaking of running quarterbacks, I was watching, I just happened to catch the last, three quarters of last year's Texas A&M Alabama game. Fucking Johnny Manziel, man. I hope that guy's eligible. He is a treat to watch. He is a treat to watch. And I know he's got all these problems going on, but have you seen this Uncle Nate character?
No. I'm not sure what you're referring to as Uncle Nate.
Yeah, this is a guy. This is the guy who's brokering these deals. He made $7,500 signing autographs.
Is that what he goes? Isn't this his buddy? But he goes by Uncle Nate.
This is buddy. Okay, his manager.
All right. Yeah. Okay. I understood his friend. His longtime friend was his manager and his kind of his talking. His manager. His FaceTime.
He's 20 years old. So yeah. You know this kid probably sitting around his dorm room smoking, taking bong rips. Watching freaking seasons 1 through 3 of Entourage, and now he's got Johnny, who's just his buddy, and this is golden ticket. You know what I mean? So it's a dangerous thing. And I'm sure Johnny Manziel's not that bad of a character. You know, he drinks, but it's the day and age. This narcissism, this putting everything out on Facebook, and everything's about being a baller. And you've been told, these guys are 20 years old. They've been told since day one that it's all about making money. You know what I mean? It's all about, get rich or die trying. So it'd be a shame. What they should do with a guy like Johnny Manziel is they should fine the fuck out of the school or the head coach, and that especially the head coach, and that would freaking turn these guys around real quick because they got to show up to practice. They'll run them to death.
But even too, it's Johnny and his family already talking crap about the school and their head coach, because they're already wanting theirs.
No, I don't think that. I've never read anything about him talking.
Said anything. There's been articles already about how, Texas A&M is taking advantage. They're making all this money off of Johnny and what he's supposed to get back.
It's a fundamental flaw with the system of NCAA. We'll go on. We'll talk about that at some point. I mean, they make a ton of money off these kids, and they can't make a little bit of money. They want Johnny Manziel's autograph. They don't want Texas A&M's autograph. But it would just, to digress, I don't want to talk too much about that. It would be a shame if he doesn't play this season for all those who love college football, because the guy is fucking electric. He is a right-handed Steve Young, maybe with a little bit more escapability, but he's got that type of talent. Even though his ball is ugly as hell when it comes out of his hand, puts it right on point. I watched that game yesterday, and he won that game single-handedly for him. Every time they had pressure on him, he got out and made a play.
Nonetheless, if Johnny Manziel doesn't play, there will be a Heisman winner playing this season. Yeah. And so I think college football will be able to move on without him.
Fair enough, but he is one of the most talented quarterbacks I've ever seen. Michael Vick also getting back to that Pats Eagles game. Did you see that throw Michael Vick made? Just flicked his wrist and threw it.
DeShaun Jackson?
Flicked his wrist and threw it 55 yards on point. That Eagles team, they're going to be blowing Chip Kelly all year. But they're doing stuff that is going to change the game. That whole running that outside zone and inside zone and getting that line out and then just pulling it on the backside, you put a lot of pressure on that D end, and he just pulls it and he's right there. And Vic, all Vic's got to do is get out and run the ball 8 times, and he can get out and run the ball 8 times to 60 yards and a touchdown. But on the flip side, the Eagles don't play D. That was terrible. It was like Pop Warner with LeGarrette Blount. He was like playing against my team, my high school team.
Honestly, I think it's to the point where when it comes to the Hall of Fame voting that they should be talking about Jim Johnson just going into the Hall of Fame as a D coordinator, because once he passed away, that Eagles defense just has looked awful.
Valid point. There's a lot. And the same point, Dante Scarnecchia, who's been the offensive line coach for the Patriots for the 20 years. I don't know the numbers on the top of my head, but a long time. Just installs an attitude of bullying. You know what I mean? And that's one thing that everybody always says when they play a pitcher. Oh, they're trying to bully us. But that's what you want up front.
So those wrestlers on their offensive line.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure a couple of them. But Stephen Neal there for a minute. But he's been long gone. He hasn't played in a while.
For a minute. three Super Bowls, my man.
What? No, no, he's been gone. He has, yeah, but yeah. He hasn't played. Yeah. I don't know if he was a guy. I don't know. But yeah, it's the same mentality, you know. And as an offensive line coach myself, and you as a wrestling coach, you can appreciate that work ethic of the guys who are just punching people in the face, and that's what the game's all about. So I think Dante Scarnecchia should be the same. Jim Johnson, I agree. I think assistant coaches should be up for the Hall of Fame, and you never see that.
So for Dick LeBeau.
Yeah, Dick LeBeau as well. Yeah. Another good example.
No, he's in.
Oh, well, he's in as a player, though, I think.
Well, I think there's multiple titles under his
induction. He had a great career.
Yeah. He's been in it for 35 years.
He's been in the Hall of Fame for 35 years?
No, but he's been in that involved in the NFL at some point for 35 years. I mean.
Right. How the Raiders look?
To be honest with you, I was surprisingly satisfied. They look solid. Like as I mentioned before, usually at this time in our season, we're already looking at what kind of draft pick we could probably be getting. But we look competitive, you know. And the one thing that was kind of that everyone's been complaining about is the quarterback spot. And I don't think we look great at quarterback, but I don't think we look awful either.
I think Flynn is solid. I think he'll be a solid quarterback. Terrell Pryor is a really good athlete. Same type of thing, you know. If they can use him correctly, and Darren McFadden, I wouldn't say he's a once-in-a-generation talent. If I 2 years ago I may have said that. I think he slowed down a bit because that's what happens in the NFL. But, yeah, I mean, the Raiders are the Raiders. By the way, speaking of the Raiders, off top, has anybody signed Richard Seymour, to your knowledge?
Atlanta Falcons were supposed to be the closest, and they couldn't come to agree. Basically, Seymour wanted a little bit more guaranteed money, and they kind of quit talking, and that was the last time I've ever heard an NFL team talk to him.
Former Raider on the Patriots tearing it up. Great play. I've been watching for a while. Tommy Kelly.
Not a big fan of his, but...
How so? Why, on a personal level?
I never saw the passion from him. Saw, like, for years of watching him be a Raider, I just couldn't wait till we cut ties with him.
Oh, wow. I disagree.
So be it. If he's on another team and it's working out, great. But I look at him as being just cap death for us because we never got the money out of him that was paid to him. Garbage.
Rest of the I disagree, and hopefully he'll be hosting the Lombardi Trophy and, you know, putting in your garbage. What about, you know, I really don't want to go through the scores of preseason because it's preseason. How about this Bernie Kosar thing and how Jeff Fisher, if you don't know, Bernie Kosar called out Kellen Clemens saying he couldn't stand watching him. And supposedly Kelly Clemens signed an autograph for the Pope, and the conversation went, Bernie said something along the lines, "Blessed me, Father, for I have sinned. I have to watch him for the whole fourth quarter," which I thought was pretty clever. You got to realize these preseason games, out of all these games, only 11 of the 64 games are nationally televised. This is a local thing. As a local fan watching games, what the fuck do you care if this guy is ragging on the opposing team? That's what you want. Do you think that he was out of line?
I just thought let me put it this way. I think he was just looking to bash. And I think he did go too far. I was just happy that Jeff Fisher's willing to step up and say what he did. Because so often or not, you hear the coaches, like, you know, you talk about the Patriots, Bill Belichick. He is a very neutral, nullifying talker when he goes up in front of the media. Jeff Fisher spoke his mind. He was very passionate. He was very personal.
I think he took a cheap shot at Bernie, saying Bernie has well-documented personal problems. Look, Bernie Kosar was a fucking stud. Bernie Kosar was a great college quarterback, a great NFL quarterback. And, you know, the game has become fucking so many stiff shirts.
And he's been a noted alcoholic ever since all of that happened.
Oh, yeah. This glass house that should not throw stones. I'm just kidding. No, and he's had brain trauma.
Yeah.
And one of the things I thought that was funny that came up is, you know, he's talking about how horrible the receivers were, and his co-host said, well, you know, they might have parents watching. And he said, well, they should be embarrassed to watch them, which I thought was funny, but I thought it was funnier that poor Bernie, his daughter's a porn star. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
But that's hilarious.
Yeah, so like, I guess those wide receivers' parents could have last laugh when they pop in their DVD porn and see Bernie's daughter going at it. But
Who's the actor that just had a daughter? Was it Lawrence Fishburne that has a daughter that just came out that did something like that?
Yeah, a little while ago. Something like that. But But, you know, hey, Bernie supposedly had a lot of brain trauma. I believe it. But he was a great quarterback. And what the hell? The game's fun. He's and at one point he said, hey, I'm sure this guy's a great guy. You know, what the hell? Everybody's such a stiff shirt in this league. You know, freaking the Goodalls and the, you know, Jeff Fisher, who's best buddies with Greg Williams, by the way. And it's not like Greg Williams had just came up with this bounty thing on a whim. Jeff Fisher had hired him after the fact. You know, all Jeff Fisher had to say is, who cares what Bernie Kosar has to say? Next question. You know what I mean?
Since you brought that up, let's backtrack about a year ago. What about that bounty thing? Do you think that was blown way too far out of proportion?
I do, and I actually have... Well, if I can we ever get to it, I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. I do and I don't. It's a sticky situation. I don't think he should have been fined as much as he is, but it, in light of what's going on in the NFL, I mean, it's just bullshit. People, you know, I've heard Pop Warner coaches break on, you know, defense calls a signal and it's kill, you know, as a break. It's just semantics. I do think he went a little bit over the line, though, with, like, going after the ACL. He was like James J. Dillon from the Four Horsemen, He's like a wrestling, you know, a professional wrestling manager. He's like, I got the first one. You know, I do think he went over the top with it, but I don't really want to get into that now. I got a schedule, damn it. We only got 55 minutes there, Lurk. But you got guys like Peter King coming out, calling Bernie Kosar out. Like, oh, Bernie, another guy, freaking keyboard jockey, jock sniffer, like Peter King, running his mouth.
Big difference between Peter King, Jeff Fisher. Jeff Fisher was actually a player at one point.
Sure, player in the NFL. No doubt about that.
Peter King was not.
No, of course not. He's a jock sniffer, freaking keyboard jockey who went to college and probably got an internship right after college, did a little bit of work, and now he's a so-called expert. I have no use for those types of guys because they're everywhere. Not saying I was freaking, you know, big-time player by any means, but I lived the game, and I've sat in the film rooms forever, but... Peter King, you know, the league is full of drunks, assholes, renegades, and just downright mean people, which is a segue to get back to the Hall of Shame. For all our listeners and my two Twitter followers, we're getting back to the Hall of Shame. Let's go defense. Screw it. We got to move a little quicker because we don't mess around here. Not a lot of time. Defensive end, it all starts up front. Leonard Little, Rams, Pro Bowl 2003, Super Bowl champion, 1998. He was leaving a birthday party, crashed and killed somebody. 19-year-old girl. 4 years probation for that. I don't know how that happens. 4 years probation, crashed and killed somebody. 2003, charged with making harassing calls to the police department.
What?
Yeah. 2004, DUI again, 2 years probation. I don't know how it happens. Earned $31 million in 12 years of playing defensive end for the Rams. Second defensive end. One of the greats of all time. Great characters of all time. The great Mark Gastineau. Five-time All-Pro. 22 sacks in the year of 1984. 4 sacks in the Pro Bowl. Guy goes hard every time. 1987, he broke the strike. He was a scab. Because he had to pay alimony. That's what he said. 1988, he was leading the AFC in sacks through week 7 and retired abruptly because he said his wife at the time, or his fiance, I'm not sure, Brigitte Nielsen, you know who that is?
Yeah, that was, wasn't that she married to Schwarzenegger too? Well, not Schwarzenegger, but Stallone?
Married to Stallone, yeah. Also starred in Rocky IV and Red Sonja. I didn't know about the Red Sonja. But he claimed he retired because she had cancer of the uterus. Later, he came out because he was tested for a third time positive for steroids, which, this blew my mind after looking into it. He tested positive for the third time for steroids in 1988. But steroid use was not punishable by suspension in the NFL until 1989.
Ooh.
Right? They'd love to talk about the good old days and how, you know, especially in baseball and how guys, you know, back then when the game was clean, bullshit. They just didn't check for it. They didn't check for it, which also led me deeper into, I mean, you know, you remember Lalo Zedo?
Yeah.
His big thing with he was on the Sports Illustrated cover in 92, you know, he died from cancer, unfortunately. Doctors said steroids had nothing to do with it. You know, the whole steroid thing is a mess. We'll get into that another podcast because you could go on and on about it. But they tested for it, but it was like a slap on the wrist in 87. And then in 89, they finally ended up suspending people. Couple more DNs. Let's do it quickly. Dexter Manley, 91, banned for life of failing 4 drug tests. Poor bastard been in rehab 17 times. Only went to 1 Pro Bowl, which I thought was a little bit surprising. He also claimed he couldn't read coming out of Oklahoma State College, Oklahoma State University. Did you know that?
Go Sooners.
Cowboys, kid. Oh my God, Cowboys. Still couldn't read. Here's another DN. Now the guys on this team have been players, ballers. This guy, you know, he did make the pros, which is an accomplishment nonetheless. But a guy by the name of Robert Rozier. You familiar with this story?
Uh-uh.
Went to Cal Berkeley, drafted by the Cardinals. Quit after 2 games. Okay, but when he quit, he joined what was called the Brotherhood, which was a Hebrew Israelite temple of love led by a guy named Yahweh Ben Yahweh. And in 1986, the membership of the Brotherhood required murdering a white devil, and you had to return a body part to this Yahweh Ben Yahweh guy to prove that you killed a white person. He ended up killing 7 people.
Whoa.
Agreed to testify against Yahweh Ben Yahweh. Sentenced to 22 years in prison. After killing 7 people, sentenced to 22 years in prison and got out in 10 years and was placed in the witness protection program. Amazing. 1999, convicted of passing bad checks. 3rd strike law, 25 to life. But isn't that crazy? You kill 7 people, you turn on someone else, you get 10 years, and then you go on a witness protection program. Now, I don't know about you, but I've seen My Blue Heaven with Steve Martin, and I think the witness protection program looks pretty cool. Sometimes I wish I could be put in the witness protection program, go live in Arizona somewhere and get my groceries paid for. I mean, amazing.
You know, like, honestly, like, we hear a lot about our law system today, you know, like I said, where people, like, get these 30-day jail sentences, but they only actually serve 2 because of all these little loopholes. But it doesn't seem like it was much different back in the 80s and 90s either.
I would make the argument it was actually much easier, and here's another good example of why. They were much more lenient back then. You got away with a lot more, much more shit. Defensive tackle, Ernie Fat Holmes, fat in quotes, 2-time Super Bowl champion for the Steelers. 1973, he was charged with shooting a highway patrol helipilot after he was being chased on the highway in a high-speed chase because he was shooting at trucks on the highway. Abandoned his car, was found in a field, given 5 years probation, and he played 5 more years for the Steelers until he was traded. Played the next season. 5 years, he was shooting at random trucks on the highway, caught in a high-speed chase, shot at a helicopter, found him, and the fucking guy played next season and was given 5 years probation. 1973. I think things were more fucked up then than they are now. Check me if I'm wrong, Lurk. Good insight. Yeah. What do you think?
I'm a little bit taken back by just like sit hearing all this. It sounds like it was like the Wild West.
Right, exactly. Would, yeah. Imagine if that happened now.
Yeah.
That guy would never play again.
I remember as a kid doing stuff like that, but we were using like potatoes, not bullets and stuff. I mean, I don't know. It's just...
Yeah,
it's
potatoes in North Dakota, potato guns, a little bit different than rolling down the freeway in Pittsburgh, busting off gats at trucks. Defensive tackle, Alonzo Spellman, Buckeye, drafted in the 1st round by the Bears in 1998. First incident, became enraged when a doctor was late for an appointment, pulled off the phone from the wall, smashed it against the floor, and then threatened suicide. 2002, disrupted a flight. This is after 9/11. Got up, claimed the flight was going to crash, started threatening members of the crew, had to be subdued, spent 18 months in federal prison. 2008, was led police on a high pursuit chase in Oklahoma after an incident at a convenience store. Another quick anecdote, a good friend of mine, Chris Claiborne, played on the Lions. Spellman played on the Lions for a bit. And another guy that could have made the team but didn't was Charles Haley, who was certifiably nuts himself. And Chris said in the defensive huddle, Spellman and Haley would stop barking at each other. And he said like they were speaking in tongues. It's like there's just two crazy people barking at each other, and they would look, and then the players would look around and be like, "Are these guys serious? Just two madmen going at each other." Amazing. You know anything about Alonzo Spellman?
Not too much. Not too much. Just off the cuff.
That's why I pay you the big bucks.
Yeah, exactly.
That's team tackle. Albert Haynesworth, Patriot way, kid. First round draft choice, 6'6", 317 pounds, running a 4'7", 5'40". 2003, in camp, kicked a teammate, Justin Hartwig, which was a precursor to 2006 when he stomped on Adrian Andre Garod with his helmet off. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Guy's helmet came off and he stomped him in the face.
It was just one of those, it was at the beginning of just kind of where things started getting a little bit disrespectful on the field in the NFL.
Started to?
Well, I mean, it's where they always talk Roger Goodell with the two fists of hell, you know, that he carries, or the hammers of hell, I should say, that he supposedly carries. But again, I think a lot of that had to happen because of where you're, like I said, people just started getting a little too out there on the, like I said, with, and then Ndamukong Suh, you know, and the kind of the crap he starts pulling.
Yeah, he didn't make the team. Yeah, good point. 2008, Albert Haynesworth again, speeding 100 miles an hour, crashed into someone, left a guy partially paralyzed. 2009, even after all this bullshit, 2009, signed a 7-year, $100 million contract with the Redskins. Refused to show up to offseason workouts, came in bad shape, and then questioned the defensive scheme that was being placed that didn't utilize his talents. After all that, Bill Belichick and the Patriots decided to sign him. Even though in 2010, stripper from New York City sued him for $10 million because he impregnated her and left. Now, who knows? He might not have done that, but decent chance with his smoke, this fire. Patriots cut him after, what, November because he got into a fight with Pepper Johnson. Pepper Johnson gets a lot of fights with players, which I like. I think Pepper Johnson does a lot of good things with that team. But the 7 years, $100 million contract for a guy who is unstable. Let's move on to the linebackers because these are the most talented position on this whole team.
And probably most interesting as well.
Shit, I don't know. You get more interested than stocking white boys and killing them and cutting off their body parts. But these are the most talented. These are guys that, you know, names that are well known. Number one, Thomas Hollywood Henderson. Hollywood Knights and old Hollywood Heels. 75 to 79, Dallas Cowboys, Pro Bowl in 78. Here's an interesting tidbit on him. After high school, he joined the Air Force, but he quit before he was sworn in. So he didn't get a college scholarship, ended up going to NAIA Langston University. Played there, was an All-American. Claimed to snort liquid coke during games. One of the big things that got him tossed out of Dallas when in the team, they were losing 34-20 to Washington on a Monday night, and he was playing up on the sideline. I guess he was freaking high as a tree, and he was playing up on the sideline, showing off a logo, mugging it up for the camera. Snorted that night on the way back, was high on coke, drinking the hallway, challenging coaches to fight. Tom Landry ended up cutting him. Super Bowl champion as well. Lost his Super Bowl where he was claiming he was high as well. 83, arrested for smoking coke with two teenage girls out here in the great state of California. Accused of threatening the girls and sexually assaulting them. In 2000, won the lottery for $28 million. Last interview he gave, they asked him what he does. He says, "I don't do a damn thing, and I don't start doing that till after lunch." Hey, karma, man. What goes around comes around. He inspired the great Lawrence Taylor to wear number 56.
Oh, my goodness.
He's my other outside linebacker. I'm going outside, inside, outside. Other inside linebacker, the great Ray Lewis. Two-time Super Bowl champ.
Wait a minute. Isn't this pastor or preacher Ray Lewis?
Two-time Super Bowl champ, 13-time Pro Bowler, two times AP Player of the Year. Cut to the chase in 2000. Fight broke out. Two stabbing deaths. Ray and his buddies jumped in his limo, got rid of his white suit, was found not guilty. Well, charges were dismissed for murder, exchanged for money against his buddies. 12 months probation, $250,000 fine by the NFL. Two buddies ended up being acquitted for that. Next year, Super Bowl MVP. 2004, reached a settlement with his with a four-year-old dog, one of the guys that died. Here's the thing that always gets me in the tape interview. He said, God has never, remember that? Remember this interview? God has never made a mistake. That's just who he is, you see? To the family, if you knew, if you really knew the way God works, he don't use people who commits anything like that for his glory. I have no idea what that fucking means.
A lot of times when Ray spoke, I had no idea what actually the point he was trying
to make. Motherfucker could hit people, though.
Yes.
No doubt about that. Another bastard who could hit people. Lawrence Taylor, a 10-time Pro Bowl, a 10-time All-Pro, 2-time Super Bowl champion, 3-times AP Player of the Year. Ranked 3rd in the NFL's top 100 players of all time. He didn't play football until the 11th grade. Thought that was interesting.
Great. Do you ever know what brought him out?
Someone talked him into it. I guess he was a baseball player. He was a catcher. And then, well, shit. I would think, I work in schools. You work in schools. You see someone like that running around like, hey, Lawrence, you think you want to go out and play some ball?
Well, especially too, when they jump from that sophomore to junior year, you just see such a development in their body type to where that is the man that they're eventually going to be. That's their frame that they're going to have. And some of those kids just blossom at that time. You're like, oh, hey.
That's true. That is a big year. That 10th to 11th grade. Yeah, is a big year. Suspended in 1988 for failing 2 drug tests. So he gave it up cold turkey for 5 years because he knew a 3rd test would end his career. But he said the whole time, which I think is funny, he was looking forward to pick up the habit as soon as he was done. And he did. During the 90s, he lived in a house with white sheets that covered all his windows. Sent hookers. This is another thing when his playing days I thought was class move. I thought it was funny as hell. He sent hookers to hotel rooms to opposing players before games. The night before the games, he knew where they were staying. He would send hookers to their rooms. Spent thousands of dollars a day on drugs.
Strategy.
It is a good strategy. It is a good strategy, right? You're sitting there watching a rerun of The Simpsons and some beautiful woman comes in and she doesn't have to say what, just throws herself at you.
That ain't Marge.
A lot of those guys would succumb to that, I would think. It's another great one. Showed up to a team meeting with handcuffs on because he was with a couple ladies who had handcuffs but didn't have the keys. Showed up to the team meeting the next day with the handcuffs on. Love Parcells. I was reading a book about Parcells. Love Parcells because Parcells would let those guys get away with that shit. He was hard, but he would let. Because he knew Lawrence Taylor was a once-in-a-generation talent. Mm. He would let him get away with that stuff, even though he was hot as hell on guys like Phil Sims, who just made his life miserable. He was kind of hands-off with Lawrence Taylor, That's what those guys are so hypocritical, although I have a ton of respect for Parcells. Even though, just on a side note, one of the reasons Parcells left the Patriots, why they had such an acrimonious relationship with Kraft, I thought this was an interesting tidbit. Parcells never, when Kraft was with his wife, Myra, rest his soul, Parcells wouldn't even say hi to her. He wouldn't even acknowledge her. And that really rubbed Kraft the wrong way. I thought that was interesting. It's something I just read that I never known.
Has he always had issues with women, or has he looked down upon them?
He has a couple daughters and he's divorced, but he wouldn't even acknowledge her. It's a little odd.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I guess that was a real divisive factor between the two. Which, interesting thing. Let's go to the DBs real quick. Adam Pac-Man Jones, still in the league. I was watching Hard Knocks the other night.
Was on Bengals?
Yeah, he's in the Bengals, still in the league. And this is another All-American in basketball and track in high school. He was a 3-sport All-American in high school.
Wow.
5'10 All-American in hoops. Great story. The 2007, the Making It Rain incident, hanging out with Nelly. One of the strippers he evidently didn't like wasn't good enough looking for him. And he slammed her head off the stage. Was thrown out of the club. Remember, his posse came back and just opened up fire on the whole strip club. Ended up paralyzing some poor bastard and ended up hitting some other guy. Didn't paralyze him. After that, if you remember, you're not a professional wrestling fan, are you, Lurk?
No.
He ended up in TNA wrestling. He was in professional wrestling for a little bit and started a rap group called Poster Boys with a Z. If you want street cred, instant street cred, just put anything with a Z, like Bad News Kennels and Mike Vick. Poster Boys with a Z. Throw some street cred on that. Came up with one single. 2008, Jerry Jones decided to hire a bodyguard for him. Pac-Man came home drunk one night and ended up getting in a fist fight with the bodyguard. Ended up getting released from the Cowboys, accused of hitting a woman in 2008 as well. 2013, now he's playing for the Bengals. Talented fucking guy. And I bet you he plays and does well this year. He just has it. Did you watch the first episode of Hard Knocks?
No, but I heard a lot of it's Hugh Jackman. I guess they got him. You know, then the part I have a problem with that is why do they have an assistant coach talking so much on a show like that?
He's a character.
That he is.
And, you know, anytime you put a camera in front of a character, he's going to be someone that they naturally gravitate to. It was just the first episode. I'm sure they'll kind of get away from him.
I heard an interesting nickname that he had back in his USC days.
What is it?
It's called Booty Scalp.
Booty Scalp?
You see that, you know, that scar that he has on his face? Mm-hmm. Basically, he had to have a skin graft, and they took the skin from his ass, and they had to graft it onto his face. And so a lot of the USC players referred to him as Booty Scalp.
That's clever. The only thing I know, and I like Marv Lewis, he's the second longest tenured coach in the NFL. The thing I appreciate about Marv Lewis, I think he's a sincere guy, but why are they putting the Bengals back on? They only put the Bengals on like, what, 3-4 years ago? Is it just a matter that nobody else wants to do it?
That's the thing, is no one wants to do it. I mean, especially where at first, like, especially with the Jets, where everyone's like, oh, they're going to get all these free agents because it just made Rex Ryan look like the guy that everyone wants to play for. But then it kind of backfired. Then everyone was able to see their garbage. They were able to see kind of like, who's their GM that got canned?
Tannenbaum.
They were able to see how loosey-goosey kind of he was. And, you know, and where, like I said, that's a franchise that, you know, like it might be all fun and games, but when they're not winning, then they're, you know, they're a mess. They're looking for someone to point the finger at.
I respect Rex. Like, I respect, even though with his foot fetish, I do respect him. Well, he calls a defense. And like I said, I respect coaches that are actually out there calling one side of the ball. And they're rare. And I got to look that up. How many, you know, because even watching that game yesterday, that Texas A&M game with Alabama, they rave about Saban. But when they show him, they're just walking up and down the sidelines. Now, I know there's a lot more to it. You structure it. But to me, the games are won on the field, and they're won a lot of times by coordinators. They're always won by talent. Look, there are three things that win football games. Talent, execution, 1 and 2 by far, and 3, scheme. Schematically, you need to have somebody who's freaking calling the right plays at the right time. And I think as a head coach, you need to be making those calls. That's when the game is won.
Now, with that, I mean, because I've never called plays for football, but The way I would kind of hope it would work with those head coaches telling their coordinators, hey, we want to run the ball. We want at least 3 yards of this play. We want to run the ball. Pick the right play for us running the ball that's at least going to get us these 3 yards. Or we want to go all out for it. But again, then that coordinator is going to say, hey, this is the frame of reference I have. Now I just got to pick the right play to meet our head coach's expectations. I mean, you'll know better than me. Does that happen? Is that how it works with some of those coaches that are not calling plays? They give their coordinators a frame of reference of what they want.
Calling plays is difficult. Shit is being fighting. It is very easy to say, hey, I just want a play that's going to get us 4 yards here. And I don't even know if those guys do that. Calling plays is really tricky. It's fun. It's an adrenaline rush. It's a high. You freaking, you know, you're calling those plays and you're not thinking about anything other than those plays, which is one of the things I enjoyed about it. I've called both sides of the ball. Defensively, I think offense is a little bit more fun, but you got to get those plays in. Bam, 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 bam. Everything's rapid fire. And to me, that's where the money is. And these guys that are just kind of the, you know, this is the CEOs, if you will. I don't know. I think that's an overrated thing. I think guys like Billy Belichick, who, again, I'm one of the biggest Patriots fans going, but I respect, to get back to my original point, I respect for a guy like Rex Ryan that's actually fucking calling the plays. And there's only the guy that, Oh, who's that guy there? Now he's the coach, Arians, Bruce Arians, mm-hmm. from the Cardinals. He calls plays as well.
Garrett just had his play calling privileges taken away.
Yeah, that's going to work out well. What a fucking joke that is.
Oh, I've seen Callahan call some pretty good games. He used to be a Raiders coach back in the day. And
sure.
We had he guided Rich Gannon to an MVP season.
He did. But Rich Gannon was a late bloomer, a really good quarterback.
I'm a huge Rich fan.
A really underrated quarterback. Yeah. Tremendous accuracy. You know, accuracy means everything.
Let me put it this way. If they're talking about Donovan McNabb being eligible for the Hall of Fame, I think Rich Gannon should get also consideration.
Yeah, you know, I'm very liberal in my Hall of Fame. I think a lot of guys should be able to get in. But McNabb, let's not mince words. Because he was probably the greatest black quarterback of all time, career-wise.
Moon, man. Warren Moon.
He's in the Hall of Fame, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well.
But.
Oh, yeah, right. My point was. Yeah, probably Warren Moon. I'd like to look at those stats. But, McNabb is a great quarterback.
I'm not saying he's bad, but again, if they're going to talk about him being a good potential as a Hall of Fame inductee.
Rich Gannon deserves consideration as well.
Yeah.
DBs. Interesting fellas, as always. Daryl Henley, UCLA All-American right here. Played for the Rams. 41 years, sentence of 41 years in prison. Found guilty for conspiracy to distribute cocaine while he was waiting his sentence. Ordered the killing of a judge and a former Ram cheerleader who testified against him. Needless to say, that backfired against Daryl. And now he is serving life in prison. Safeties. Remember a guy named Lewis Billups played for the Bengals?
Lewis Billups, dude. Lewis Billups. No, I do not.
Don't remember him, but the fucking guy dropped a pick in the 1990 Super Bowl. Okay? Was it 90? Oh, 89. Anyways, Montana threw a fucking pick in his lap. The guy dropped it in the fourth quarter. Montana ended up throwing a touchdown pass to Jerry Rice the next play. Guy had it, dropped it. 1990, ended right after that Super Bowl, and it spent 30 days in jail for pointing a gun at undercover cops. In 92, he raped a woman, videotaped it, threatened to take it to her husband unless she paid him $20,000. Sentenced to 3 years in prison.
Wait a minute. He raped a woman and then wanted her to pay him off?
Yeah, that's what I read. I think it might have just been a consensual sex thing. The words might have been minced. Check that. No, he didn't even get in charged with prison for that. 3 years probation. Then he ended up making threats against the basketball player, Rex Chapman. You know Rex? Remember Rex Chapman?
No.
Oh, great University of Kentucky player. Anyways, the guy was dating his sister. Lewis Billups was dating his sister, made threats to her and him. Enough was enough. They sent him to prison for 3 years. 6 days after he was released from prison, slammed through a guardrail, killed himself and the passenger of his Corvette. And last but not least on the defense, Eugene Robinson. You remember that story, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Seattle, Green Bay, Atlanta, Carolina, Super Bowl 33. Night he was awarded the Bart Starr Award for showing sportsmanship from a Christian group for high moral character. Same night, he was arrested at 3 in the morning before the Super Bowl for soliciting an undercover cop for $40 for a blowjob. Ended up giving a big touchdown up in the Super Bowl the next day. Ended up missing a huge tackle the next day. The guy must have slept maybe an hour or two after getting arrested. He must not have slept at all.
Well, and just what was he doing before that, too? I'm sure he just didn't decide to be up to no good at that instant moment. It's like, wow, I just woke up from a great rest. And
you don't know, man. Some guys' sexual drive's difficult to decipher.
Yeah.
Some people just need it. And who knows? The guy might have been doing it his whole life. Hey, every night before a game, I go out and get a blowjob. While his wife waited in the hotel room. Now he's a head football coach for Charlotte Christian School. He's forgiven. He is forgiven. Let's see if we can get through the front office real quick. Front office of the Hall of Shame team, and we are done with this. Owner, Georgia Frontier, Madam Ram, inherited the Rams from her sixth husband, Carol Rosenbloom. I don't know if you know that story. He owned the Colts, traded the Colts to Robert Irsay for the Rams, groomed his son his whole life to take over the Rams. When he died, he left the team to her. She fired her stepson. 3 months later, she fired him. Imagine that. You have your son grooming the whole, his whole life to take over the team. You marry some woman who's been married 6 times. She fires him. He signs the team over to her. She fires the kid. 6 months later from that, she got married again to a guy named Frontier and took his fucking name. Imagine that. The guy who gave her the team, she doesn't even have that same last name. She got a brand new name.
Sounds like a class act.
Class act. Ended up, she ended up dying in 2008. Took the fucking team from LA. Her and Al. But I can forgive Al because, like yourself, Al doesn't do any wrong by me.
Yeah.
You know, he was doing what he had to do. She took the Rams out of here. Assistant head coach Lou Holtz, 3-10, quit. We all know Lou Holtz quit on the Jets in 1976 with one game left. I have no room for quitters. That's I can't stand people that quit. Finish the fucking season, Lou. God didn't put Lou Holtz on his list to coach the New York Jets. That's what he said. That's my terrible Lou Holtz impersonation. You ever watch him on game day?
Yeah, I do. And I struggle with it. I just, I keep on thinking about listening, Matt, trying to imagine listening to him in a locker room, and I would have a hard time with it.
They say he was a mean bastard. He would get away with like punching guys.
His demeanor must really change once you get behind those closed doors.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. They say he was a mean prick. He would, according to the book, behind the tarnished dome or whatever it is, he really forced steroid use on people. He was just a bad character. Here's a great one. Here are my assistants. Joe Kellen drove through a Wendy's drive-thru naked in 2006 while he was drunk the night before a preseason game.
Must be one of those rituals again.
That's one of those things that, you know, being a coach in the college game for a long time, even the high school game, it always blew my mind, and I was guilty of it as well, but I wasn't, not when I'd been calling plays and had more responsibility and grew up to be a fucking adult, that these guys with the nights before games, they'll go out and get shit-faced. These assistant coaches, even though they put in all this work for these 10 weeks that they need to be on point, they end up getting fucking drunk those night before games. Not all of us drove through Wendy's naked. 2 weeks later, the guy got DUI'd again. 2 weeks fucking later. You would think that would be a sober and wake-up call that, hey, I'm driving through Wendy's naked. 2 weeks later, again, arrested for DUI. Now he is a coach for the Browns. Still a defensive line for a coach. But on a side note, he was a 4-year starting nose guard for UMass, which... I know you've never been to UMass, but that's why they call it ZooMass. Nothing but animals there. And if you're a 4-year starting nose guard, you got to be fucking crazy. I'm sure the poor guy's crazy. Poor guy probably makes $250,000 a year to coach D-line.
Oh, shame.
Tom Cable, your boy, yeah, assistant coach. He's my O-line coach. Broke a jaw of another assistant.
I don't know if you could really call him an assistant.
Well, he was head coach when he did that.
Yeah, but I don't think the guy that he hit, you could actually call an assistant coach.
Oh, he wasn't?
He was more or less Al's ears.
Then you would think he would be smarter than that in general.
I agree. I completely agree. But I don't know if we could really call him assistant coach.
Oh, he's kind of a rat?
He was Al's ears in the coach's office.
Oh, fair enough. Should I do these? I'm doing it. I'm going for it. Towel boys. Andy Reid's kids. Whew, too soon. I know. Look, the guy died last year. However, the guy was busted twice for driving under the influence of heroin. If you're taking somebody else's life at risk for, you know, driving around using heroin, then I don't care. You're free game.
Touche.
And they said, here's the deal with Andy Reid. Like Andy Reid's listening. Like Andy Reid's one of my 2 Twitter followers. They said when they went into Andy Reid's house to arrest those kids, it looked like a fucking drug emporium. The whole house looked like freaking Breaking Bad. They said there was drugs everywhere. They said it looked like a neglect. He just neglected the house.
Well, look at Andy Reid. He neglects himself.
Fair enough. And he just got another head coaching job. Solid coach, but shit. Gets his kid a fucking job being an assistant strength coach where people would kill for that job. The kid had steroids in his room. Nothing was made of that. It's amazing. Assistant strength coach has steroids in his room, and not a peep was ever said about it. Well, because he died. By the way, real quick, when they were in prison, they found over 60 pills in the kid's ass. He's smuggling in prison. 60 pills. Oh, yeah. And the Reed family's Mormon. GM Jeff Ireland, who's the GM for the Dolphins still. Here's the fucking kicker with me. I can't believe this guy didn't get beat down. You know who Dez Bryant is, right?
Yes.
During the combine, he straight up asked Dez Bryant if his mother was a prostitute.
See, I don't have a problem with that question, especially with given some of the background and the history of some of these athletes. I mean, just like what we talked about. I mean, look at the backgrounds of some of these people. And you need to be aware of what's lurking behind there.
You're lurking behind that microphone, kid. you just don't. You find out that information, and you just don't ask another grown man if his mother's a fucking prostitute.
But you're okay with Bernie Kosar just...
Yeah, saying a guy stinks and saying he doesn't like him? Yeah. What are the difference? That's a personal question. And I'm surprised a guy didn't fucking slap him in the face. Although it does turn out his mother was a prostitute.
As he said, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah, but you couldn't find that out with your research team.
But again, it's about the honesty of the kid. Like, hey, is he going to be truthful with us right now, or is he going to give us a bunch of bull? And you want to know what you're going to get. What are you buying?
God damn it, Lurk.
Putting up to millions of dollars.
God, you find that out in other avenues. God damn it, Lurk. When you ask someone whose mom's a prostitute, and he like, yes, sir, my mother's a prostitute.
Maybe they will. But it's all about the character of the person. Again, are they going to lie to you? Are they going to feed you full of crap? That's what these people want to know. I'm going to assume. I do not have a problem with the question. It's a question. He's not telling him that his mom was one. He's just asking him.
Well, I don't know what that has to do with running an out route. I mean, look, I understand they missed millions of dollars in, but if you really think that's going to be a problem... Don't draft the kid. Fuck it.
And they didn't.
And he's a baller.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They missed out.
I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up, 1,500 yards this year. Well, it might be a lot. 1,200 yards this year and 22 touchdowns. Again, that's a lot. 15 touchdowns. Don't got a lot of time here. Here's a trivia question. What is the most common score in the NFL? End of a game, end score.
Interesting.
Give me an answer.
I'm going to say 17-14.
No. 23-20, followed by 2017, followed by 24-17, followed by 27-24.
Sounds like a lot of teams are always scoring 20.
Yeah, well, that over-under is always around 35, 37. You know what I mean? Well, not always, but that's a... that's a common one. What's the most common margin of victory? How many points?
4.
3. Second is 7.
Oh, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. Like I said, just that tiebreaker. Yeah.
Second is 7. Third is 10. What's the most common score total? Even though I just said, it was always around that. What is the most common score total? Total points?
35.
41. The average, what is the average score total?
21.
No, aggregate.
Oh, 35. 43.
43.6. Last trivia question for you. This is a complete fucking jelly beans in a jar type question. How many head coaches have there been in the history of the NFL?
235.
Not even close. 449 head coaches in the history of the NFL, of which I would say 429 haven't been worth a shit. They just get the players and they end up winning. I think we'll talk a little bit more about Billy Belichick next week. You don't get the horses, you can't win the race. Why they have, without Tom Brady. Yeah, everybody points to that year with Matt Castle. They ended up going 11-5. They still missed the playoffs that year. People don't remember. They missed the playoffs, and they had the weakest schedule, supposedly. And they ended up 11-5. It's all about the players. It's all about the quarterbacks. If you don't have the quarterback in the NFL, you just can't win. That's it. That wraps it up. We're going to hold next week. We're going to get into a little bit more of the preseason predictions. And that's it. We are out. Coach, this is Lurk. See ya.